My name's Liam Dotson. I work for Central News Agency, London, England, and you're listening to SoccerCast.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us. I'm Alex Campbell, and this is SoccerCast. We're coming to you from the banks of the Chicago River in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. On today's inaugural episode, we're going to be breaking down the FIFA World Cup group stage and looking forward to the round of 16. We also have an interview with our friend Liam Dotson of the Central News Agency in London. He's just gotten back from the World Cup in Russia. We're going to talk to him about the experience of attending a World Cup, and in particular, England's performance so far and how far he thinks they could go in the World Cup this year. I'm joined for the first half of our podcast by my partner and teammate, Drake Hills. Drake, how you doing today? Awesome to have you on the pod with me.
Yes, this is going to be an excellent time for all four of us. I think for myself, this is going to be one thing that's going to change everyone's perspective on soccer in America. We're going to be able to include everyone on every single city, every single country, a part of this earth. And we're going to cover some World Cup today. So that's going to be exciting. And I'm pretty excited to include Nick Henion and Doug Greenberg for our second half team, as they'll be covering groups E through H. And for this 1 hour special, I'm just going to hang it over to you guys. So what will be coming to us in the second half? Give us a little preview, Nick.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot to look forward to, Drake. We're going to talk a little bit about England, as we mentioned, as well as our favorite person, James Rodriguez, in Colombia. We got some upsets on that side of the bracket, Doug, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you about it.
Yeah, Nick, I'm mostly willing to dance on Germany's grave after they massively blew it, but we're going to have a good time. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show.
Yeah, too early or too late, right? Doug's over here already stomping on Germany. My goodness. You know Alex? It's almost like we're here on the riverbank. You know, that it's almost like Chicago saved the Heat for the dead day of the World Cup. What's up with that?
I mean, I don't know about that. As a native, it's one of those every summer you eventually just get that one day where summer really announces itself, and today it was, you know, it's a scorcher out there, only gonna get worse this weekend, and you know, beautiful day to spend not sitting on my couch watching the World Cup all day, as has been the norm for the last 2 weeks. But, you know, nice to get outside of it. We'll be looking forward to getting back in the AC tomorrow as the round of 16 kicks off.
Yeah, as the round of 16, as you mentioned, with France and Argentina playing, we've also got another match coming to you as well. Yeah. So it's going to be an interesting but downhill, I predict, round of 16, especially. No, I think Argentina is just a team that just blew everyone out of the water. Not only were they picked second, like they didn't even, it's just laughable to me how, especially at the back four, Alex, I don't know what was going on there. That basically Nicolas Otamendi turned into a meme, the Argentinian defender, Manchester City defender, being almost like he was he hated playing. So I'm excited to see how redemptive this Argentinian team can perform, especially with Messi carrying all of the weight. He's not necessarily Mohamed Salah in terms of being the LeBron James of his team, but it's almost like Diego Maradona, Argentina pundits, even Fox is giving him, I think, some unfair attention, especially on the negative side. So we'll see what happens. But before we get into that, let's just recap the group stage. Like, who is our biggest story, Alex? Like, who do you think, from a team's perspective, who do you think has had the best story? Who do you think has the worst story? Who's in and who's out?
I certainly think if you're talking about teams who are really going to love the way they did in the group stage, I think Croatia is probably top of my list. I mean, I think they're always considered a dark horse in the World Cup, and just the way they have come out, and you were talking about Argentina, the way that Croatia came out and absolutely dominated Group D, winning all three of their matches. I've been incredibly impressed with how well they've played it, especially the midfield partnership of Luka Modric and Ivan Rakitic. They've both been absolutely phenomenal so far. As far as in disappointments, I mean, it's really hard to say anybody except Germany. I mean, Germany has just really, it's amazing to see for the third straight year, the defending champion
World
in the
Cup
World
curse,
Cup,
of course, yeah.
To see them knocked out in the group stage, and it's just, it didn't seem like they had the fight in them this year. Obviously, we're going to hear a lot more about Germany from Nick and Doug later as they're breaking down the second half of the group stage. So I think Croatia and Germany on the opposite ends of the spectrum for me, or who really stands out. You got anything you want to throw on top
No,
of that?
No, I want to highlight how Uruguay has definitely synced and then risen above water once
definitely
again.
Under the radar.
I would consider them a submarine in this sense. Why? Because you've got someone like Luis Suarez, who is the biter. He's the guy who, with the rabbit teeth. I'm sorry for a little bit of insensitivity, but at the same time, it's almost like this guy went from being the scandalous player who got his attention through controversy. Now he's one of the top goal scorers in the World Cup as the group stage has ended and going into the knockout stage. So it's just hilarious how, or peculiarly hilarious, how he's made that turnaround. And they haven't allowed, as a team, Uruguay hasn't allowed a goal all group stage. And, you know, despite Russia's, you know, they've had average success, but I think they're a team that definitely needs some a little bit more praise. Mm-hmm. Another team that I'm a little bit skeptical about is France, a team that is predicted to get to the final after Germany has gone out. I've seen from Craig Burley from ESPN, a lot of other pundits from the United Kingdom. I'm not seeing it right now. I'm thinking that Paul Pogba hasn't necessarily been that guy for him, for Les Bleus. And as you mentioned, I think Nick Kenyon will get to that a little bit more later. But as far as A through D is considered, I want to highlight Croatia as well. The way that Ivan Rakitic and Luka Modric, you know, the Barcelona, the Real Madrid guys, how they've basically flexed their class and their talent on any other, whether it's against Argentina, whether it's against Iceland, whether it's against Nigeria. I'm just surprised at the level. Not that they're a bad team or they're a team that shouldn't get to the round of 16. However, I just don't think that the experts really expected a performance. Like I said, or like you said, they've won all three games. They've only allowed one goal all group stage. And so with Mandzukic and Perisic and Rakitic and these heavy players, these heavyweights, I'm excited to see what's going on.
All right, and with that note, you know, we're talking about who we're looking at, who we were excited about, who we were disappointed by. Let's dive right into it. Let's start right off the top with Group A, where we had Uruguay get out of the group. As you mentioned, they didn't even allow a goal, and they kind of quietly, and you'll go with your submarine analogy of been under the radar and winning all three of their games. Not particularly a tough group. They were kind of considered
the host
to have received
group, of course.
Yeah, they were kind of given a gift to be like, oh, congratulations, Uruguay. You get to be in this group with Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. Congrats on advancing to the round of 16 before we've even played a game. And they kind of lived up to that. And then you had Russia, who really seized that home field advantage. I mean, right out of the gate.
First game, what was that, six goals, five goals?
Five nil against the Saudis, which, you know, credit to Saudi Arabia for winning that final game against Egypt. But really, this was a group where the teams who were advancing, Uruguay and Russia, really set themselves apart for all three games. I think you'd agree.
Yeah, I would say Group B as well is, you know, other than that first match, was a little bit of a downfall. I don't know. What do you think about Iran in this position? Because although they did not make it with Spain and Portugal making it to the round of 16, I think that the way things happened to pan out, it was at the fault of Iran in the sense that they were able to get a win, get a draw, and lose a game only by one goal. And that may not sound great for them, but the way the numbers fall, you know, you've got Spain and Portugal barely, especially with Portugal, barely making it. You know, obviously you had a little bit of a soft matchup with Morocco, but Iran was a bit of a surprise for me. It's a little weird for me. I think this World Cup overall is a bit weird in terms of how that third place team in each group stage has managed to underwhelm or overwhelm or just hit that median. They haven't overwhelmed or underwhelmed is what I'm trying to say. They've hit that median.
Right.
So with that Group B, it's exciting to see what that match. We're going to talk about the round of 16
right,
matchups
we'll get there
later. But in terms of this group stage, I want to say thank you, Iran, for making this group stage interesting, specifically the way they played against Spain, although they did lose that game 1-0.
Yeah, the thing about Iran, and you could say that they should be going through the round of 16. I mean, they were probably, you would say, gifted a penalty late against Portugal to tie that game up, but then they had a man through on goal, more or less, with the last kick of the game. And if he scores, Iran's going through and Portugal's going home. And that was their opportunity to seize. And as you
Absolutely.
Said, they played really well at points in Group B. I mean, they got the win against Morocco. And then
luck,
know,
but not too much luck to get them through.
Right. I think they showed themselves well, but, you know, Spain and Portugal, it was really not much of a doubt who was going to be coming out of Group B when it started. If we take a look at Group C, you talked a little bit about France already, and that's a group where I think the other teams would have felt they were probably playing for second going in. France maybe didn't live up to quite the hype with all their talent that we thought they might. But then you had an interesting group stage where you had Denmark and Peru really battling it out for that second spot.
And I would give a quick shout out to Peru in this sense, because although they did not qualify, if you take a look at the energy when they did finish against France in that final match day three fixture, they're on the come up in South America. I think to Taylor Twellman's point, the ESPN pundit, he said that South America is the hardest region to compete and qualify for a major tournament, especially at the World Cup. And I agree, because with these mid-table, if you will, these mid-table countries, you've got Peru, you've got Colombia, who people think that are up there with the Brazils and Argentinas. I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah, Bolivia's in the mix as well.
Bolivia is okay. Obviously, they're not in the World Cup this year. I would say Peru. Chile obviously didn't make it, but they're still up there as well. I would say even if you go into the Mesoamerican part of the world, Venezuela is another team that does a little bit of –
yeah, they've got some quality players.
And Paraguay, you saw them as they played the men's national team in March in that friendly. I just think that that's a very, very tough place to qualify and to even play just football in general, soccer. Peru is on the come up, and I just wanted to give them a quick shout out. But as we add France with Denmark, the other team that also did qualify, what's Christian Eriksen going to do? Is he going to take on? Is he going to be that LeBron? Is he going to?
It's not much of a choice.
I don't see them. They have that game against Croatia. As I said, we're going to be getting into the round 16 matchups later. But that matchup with Croatia, a team that's, you know, full guns a blazing, this could be it. I think they got lucky.
Yeah, and both France and Denmark, I think we would agree, could have both played a little better than they did. As you mentioned, Denmark's a bit of a one-man team with Eriksen, and obviously he did enough to get them through the group stage, but kind of like you're saying, to imagine that he can be a LeBron James type of figure and drag his entire squad much further might be asking quite a lot of him. And as far as France go, we've touched on this a couple times now, they are just absolutely loaded with talent, just incredible amounts of youth, of talent, and they're a team that just – you, as a fan, you want to see them succeed, and just it's getting to a point where if they, like any major tournament, if they cannot live up to their potential, they're going to be struggling to get very far.
Nick?
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in really quickly. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on the France-Denmark game, because it was obvious at that point that both those teams were going through, and they were really playing for a draw. One stat I want to point out is that France, for as offensively gifted as they are, they have managed a total of 3 goals in the group stage. One was an own goal. One was a super lucky bounce to Kylian Mbappe, probably the easiest goal of his career. And the third came from their number 10, Antoine Griezmann. So obviously you mentioned earlier in the show that they're going up against Argentina right now, arguably the most offense first, defend later team in this World Cup. So how do you think their mindset's gonna what do you think their mindset's gonna look like going into that matchup after such a lackluster performance against Denmark?
Well, Nick, to answer your question, I would definitely include Pogba, as we knocked off this episode with mentioning, you know, who has stood out, some key defining moments. As you take his partnership, as you analyze it and watch him closely with N'Golo Kanté in that midfield, they need to release Paul Pogba. France need to release Paul Pogba and let him do what he wants to do. At the same time, they need to hold him accountable in terms of him going forward. Because if you look at the front guys for France, first of all, they don't know who wants to start up front. You've got Olivier Giroud, who's in and out, in and out, in and out. You've got Kylian Mbappe. I just don't think that he's going to be somebody who's going to be clutch enough to score goals when it comes, you know, I noted for myself that 34 goals have been scored in the group stage in the last 15 minutes. I don't think Kylian Mbappe is going to be one of those guys who continuously add to that mark. So you're going to need Griezmann and other people in the midfield. Also, France overall, I just don't think that that matchup really suits them in terms of goals. Why? What I'm trying to say is that they're going to need to win conceding one goal or less.
They're going to need to match their goal total from the group stage. Absolutely. In order to have a chance to win.
Absolutely, but right. They're also going to need Hugo Lloris, their goalkeeper, to earn a clean sheet. To you can't necessarily guarantee in this, especially in the round of 16. Once you get into the knockout stage, anything can happen. But once you get to this place, and once you get to a point in a major tournament like this, where you need your major guys to step up, I just don't think that France is going to have that one player. They're going to need right. on the defensive end. They also have issues, but we're going to get to that later, Alex. They have some issues on the back line, but they're going to need Hugo Lloris to earn a clean sheet in order to basically get a 90% guarantee that they're going to win this match.
Right, and if you look at France in a matchup against a team like Argentina, like you were asking about, Nick, I think the defining thing is France is going to have to dominate the midfield, which shouldn't be a problem for them, given to the talent of players like N'Golo Kanté and Paul Pogba up against an Argentine midfield that's devoid of names that even a pretty involved soccer fan could even name. So I think that's definitely going to be a matchup to pay attention to as we get forward in the podcast looking at the round of 16 matchups. The final group we want to take a look at here, Drake, and we've talked about them a bit already, is that Group D with Croatia, Argentina, Nigeria, and Iceland. Nigeria and Iceland, I got a feel for both of those teams.
You know what? Those were teams I really wanted to see thrive in this FIFA World Cup. For those who don't know about Iceland, it's the big clap. It's the big clap over the head, the Viking clap that's caught the attention of everyone 2 years ago in France when they played in the European Championships. They were successful, I think, by their standards, and that continued through qualifying. That, you know, obviously they were in Russia for the FIFA World Cup, and that was another big step for the Icelandics. And you know what, Nigeria, everyone knows, and if you don't, the Nike partnership, the Niger kits. Alex, come on.
Just the best, the best part of the World Cup, before the World Cup started at least, because, I mean, those jerseys sold out in what, a number of couple hours?
Yeah, it was about 3 hours. They sold not in stores, but also online. If you take a look at what happened in London, they had to basically note on the windows that we're closed, like we don't have any.
Yeah, we can't sell you anymore.
We can't sell what we don't have.
Right.
That's how quickly this wave was caught by basically everyone around the world. Especially in Europe, but obviously Nigeria, which is essentially the younger generation of the country of Nigeria, one of the stronger footballing beds, if you will.
Right, in Africa.
In Africa, alongside Ghana, who didn't qualify. But if you take a look at Nigerians in the Premier League, you've got Iheanacho with Leicester, who just moved from Manchester City, who's also with Adman Musa, who left Leicester City to go to CSKA Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
You've got other players
Victor
like
Victor Moses, John Obi Mikel's got a long history in the Premier League. Yeah.
Chelsea connections there.
Alex Iwobi.
You've got Alex Iwobi with Arsenal, another Nigerian-born, London-raised guy. This team is loaded with up-and-coming talent. As a matter of fact, they were chosen, I believe, as one of the younger teams, if not the youngest team, in the World Cup group stage.
Yeah, I know they're one of the youngest. England's in there, too. I think England might have the youngest squad, but Nigeria was definitely up there.
Yeah, well, like I said, if we can get a check by Doug or Nick, I'd definitely look that up, because if I heard correctly, Rob Stone definitely made that clear for Nigeria being one of the younger teams and I believe one of the more promising teams. So it's unfortunate to get back to the point that Iceland and Nigeria, the two most promising teams in terms of
really
style and swag
by neutrals.
Like, I mean, take a look, like they both have their own identity.
Right.
We've got like what? Denmark and Russia and Uruguay, they don't. What's your identity? What's going on here?
Well, Doug's going to inform us here real quick on the age thing. Who is the youngest team at the World Cup, Doug?
Yeah, so in terms of the stats, Nigeria is the youngest team at the World Cup. Average age, 25.9 years. France and England are actually tied for second youngest. They both have 26. And average then 26. From there, it's a half point jump up to Tunisia and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Doug. So like I said, Niger. I'm going to call them Niger because that's what Nike said. And that's what Nigeria said. That's a team that has not only midfield power, but they have an attacking prowess. You take a look at what Ahmed Musa did against Iceland. Not only were they earned goals, but they were proper style, technically beautiful, the way he broke down defenses, weaving through the back four of Iceland. And then going on the other hand, Iceland is a team that as soon as you let off the gas, they are coming at you. You've got Gunnarsson, you've got Gudmundsson, you've got
Gylfi Sigurdsson.
not necessarily players who showed up in their last match, but right. throughout the group stage in those first two matches, they were players who established themselves. They've already done so at the club level. You got Gylfi Sigurdsson with Everton in England. You've got Gunnarsson. You've got Goodmanson. Players who are well established at the club level, and they've done so a little bit at the FIFA World Cup. We'll see in the next 4 years in Qatar.
Right, and it's just touching again on the teams that qualified out of Group D, who we've talked about a bit already. Argentina, I really thought at the moment where Argentina lost that opening game, even going into the third match, I couldn't help but feeling that they were going to be this year's
Germany.
This year's Germany. And then, of course, Germany did that anyway. So, you know, I think definitely some good momentum from Argentina right now. Lionel Messi looks to have taken control of the team just beyond any of the coaching staff or any other players. He's made it pretty clear this is his squad, and he's going to take them as far as he possibly can. And then we've got Croatia, who we've talked about a bit already,
absolutely.
Who've just really been dominant, really exciting, and are definitely a team to watch going into the round of 16. Speaking of the round of 16, do we want to go ahead and take a look at our top half of the bracket
yeah,
here?
Yeah, let's quickly end with Argentina, the only scoring three goals
in this group stage. They've really got up that.
Just to give you a stat to what you had already made known. So taking a look at this team, it's not necessarily looking great for Argentina. There's no way that they're going to perform like they did in 2014.
You wouldn't think so.
And especially from the back, I just think there's a lot of issues. Who are their Nicolas Otamendi, great. Who else do you have? Marcus Rojo, great.
Hero in that last game, though,
yeah,
Marcus Rojo with
yeah,
that late winner.
Yeah, but those are not World Cup players.
No, Argentina's kind of devoid of world-class beyond their attacking talent.
And I think that's a little bit of a – that's a medium hot take because if we're taking – historically speaking –
I'm just talking about the current squad.
The current squad. I mean, the reason why I said a medium hot take is because I think with Argentina, they're a team that has players who are all over the world as one of the best, and then they come to play for Argentina. It's almost like –
and it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't make any sense, really. But, I mean, you can't play everybody at striker, which, you know, in the end
– what was that, Nick? I think we were talking earlier this week, and you were like – so these teams are over here playing like a 2-7.
Oh no, I was talking about Spain in that regard. Spain continues to prove they can play a 3-6-1 and still have success. Obviously, Sergio Ramos seems to believe he is a good striker now. You're gonna see him roaming forward from time to time. Obviously, the Spain midfield is loaded. Argentina plays a similar strategy, but we're gonna kick it back to you guys.
Yeah, I just want to note one thing that just came to mind. Thanks, Chris, for making this known. Is I think Argentina alongside Brazil, I think Russia's in this pool. I also think England is in this pool as teams who are representing countries that their biggest critic is the country itself.
Right.
Not the media, not other teams that are potential rivals or historical rivals. I think these countries, but especially Argentina, they've had, I mean, take a look at their best player and one of the best players to ever play football, soccer, Diego Maradona. Won World Cups, has controversially won World Cups, handball goals and whatnot.
And was controversially escorted from the stadium.
Escorted from the stadium for giving the bird to Nigerian fans in that match, and then also performing other antics in the stadium in a suite where you should be acting correctly, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at those teams that you just named, you know, all those ones that you were just naming, England and Argentina, all those countries, these are all teams that, you know, not so coincidentally, have not had success at the World Cup level in a very long time. And I think that's where the pressure is coming from. You know, the pressure to get that cup, you know, and it's weird because it's almost cyclical that they don't do well, so they feel more pressure, and then, you know, so on and so forth.
Alex, let's get to it. Round of 16. Who we got?
So that first matchup, we're going to have the winner of Group A. Uruguay is going to be taking on Portugal. Obviously, the story we talked about for Uruguay, they haven't been prolific offensively, but they've won other games. Portugal's got Cristiano Ronaldo, and he has been just otherworldly so far in this tournament. What's your sense of, you know, the big storylines going into this match?
I was hoping you were saving this because, for me, this is the best for last match in the top half, considering. With Uruguay and Portugal, first of all, this is their third time playing, and this is actually their first time playing in a major championship. 90 Minutes, the magazine, is saying that there's a 34% chance that Uruguay is going to win. They've got a 32% chance for Portugal going through, and there's a 34% chance that it's a draw. So there's, you know, odds-wise, this World is Cup way PKs, up in the air.
Here we come.
This is way up in the air. Portugal have only lost once since losing against Germany in the World Cup or any major competition. They've won 8 and they've drew 8 other games. So that's 16. So this is 17. So with this game, I think it's the most stalemated matchup that we're going to see. Alex, let's get going because I know we've got some other matches. The next game I'd like to highlight is Spain and Russia. First of all, I think this is going to be just a – I'm not going to say a rout. I won't say that. But I will say there's going to be some goals. I like Isco. I'm really questionable as a Bayern pundit, perhaps. Thiago started strong, and I think he's running out of gas. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that midfield. Obviously, Iniesta, this is his final goal. So we'll see if he has any extra juice. But I think there's going to be some goals, and I think Diego Costa, one of the leaders for the Golden Boot, is going to have a little bit of fun with the Russians. So
yeah.
What's next on the list?
Oh, I was just going to make a quick comment about that game. Costa's on a ridiculous roll right now for Spain. And just if Spain can keep up their offensive production, as good of a story as the Russians have been in this World Cup and how they've played in front of their home fans, it's going to be a real tough matchup for them. Looking at Groups C and D, obviously the big matchup of the day tomorrow in the first day of the round of 16 is France against Argentina. We've talked about it a few times already today. We're talking about two teams who really haven't scored enough goals, and it's, I think, really going to be a question of who can live up to their potential more in this match. Is it going to be the youth of France, or is Lionel Messi going to be able to get enough of his teammates on board to get them through?
And that's a part of the setup for tomorrow. I believe that's the first game.
I think it is the first match tomorrow morning.
At 9 a.m., I believe. So I want to include this Denmark-Croatia game. This is a lot like the Spain-Russia game in the sense that the midfield and the attacking prowess of Croatia is similar to Spain in the sense that Denmark and Russia are in a position where they're relying on a couple of players. I think Golovin for Russia is a player who's young. He's about 22. What is he, 22 or something?
Yeah, he's
like
a really
that.
Young player. Him he's and Cheryshev have been incredible.
Cheryshev is one of, I think, his performance. We're going to get to this later as the champs and chumps. But Cheryshev and Golovin, I think Golovin he's one of the most demanded players this summer. I think he's going to move to the Premier League. That's my hot take. But I will get back to saying Denmark and Russia are relying a lot on their counter and their high pressure. And I just don't think that Spain or Croatia are going to crack, especially with the experience that they have in the midfield and their attacking.
And you'd have to imagine, as good as Christian Eriksen is, there's so much talent in the middle of that midfield for Croatia, it's going to be hard for him to out-duel them all by himself. Well, we're going to take a quick break here on SoccerCast. And after the break, we're going to have Doug Greenberg and Nick Henion looking at the second half of the draw, the groups D through H, and looking ahead to the round of 16 in those groups. Thanks for listening. This is SoccerCast. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to SoccerCast. Clearly, I am not Alex Campbell. I am Doug Greenberg. I am taking over the second half of this podcast alongside my teammate Nick Henion. We will be talking about groups E through H. And Nick, we're going to just kick it right off with group E. What are your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we saw Brazil was sort of the marquee name heading into Group B right away. They obviously won their group, 7 points, 2 wins and a draw. Second is Switzerland. They're also moving on to the knockout rounds. They're going to be going up against Group F winner Sweden. We're going to hear more about that later. In terms of Group E, like, Brazil and Switzerland kicked the group off. That was obviously the matchup everyone was looking to, and they ended up drawing. And Doug, maybe you can touch on this a little. I feel like we've seen a World Cup where a lot of the heavy favorites have sort of disappointed a little. What are your thoughts on that?
Totally. I mean, Brazil, it's interesting because Brazil, you know, they haven't lost a game. They won two. They drew one against Switzerland, like you said. But it's weird. They haven't looked that as dominant as we've been expecting them to be. You know, obviously Neymar has been getting hammered in terms, not in that sense, but he's been getting hammered in terms of getting fouled all the time. I believe he's leading the entire tournament by a lot in terms of being fouled. So it's hard for him to get anything done. But besides that, the Brazilians have just been, you know, they're always concerned about playing that beautiful game, but it seems like they're also somehow getting lost a little bit. I think Drake's got something to add here.
Yeah, I just want to throw a quick stat in for you guys. 158 yellow cards in the group stage. If you take a look at the 2010 World Cup, they're basically going to double that by over 100. Totally in the 2010 World Cup, there was a 261 yellow cards. And 4 years ago, there was only 187. So they're basically doing a total reverse counterclockwise 360. And to help you out, Neymar is the most fouled player in this World Cup. So depending on how you look at it, whether you're an old school guy or one of the new modern fans, this is Neymar's game, and it's going to help Brazil get to the final.
We did see Mexico's manager allude to that in the press. He said that Neymar tends to exaggerate his fouls a little bit and really go down quite easily. Maybe not the best idea for the Mexico manager to rattle Neymar and try to provoke him before their matchup.
Why not? Yeah. I'm a first half player. I'm going to let you guys do your thing. But I will say Brazil getting fouled and with one of Costa Rica's defenders leaping up for a header and accidentally, elbowing him on his collarbone and then Neymar going down holding his face.
Well, you know, a little.
Just going to throw that out there.
Just to put a quick bow on the fouls thing, you know, going into the next round, I actually found this tweet from Fox Soccer. We've got bunch of notable players suspension risk. We're looking at Neymar, Coutinho, Rakitic. We're looking at Ronaldo. You know, so these are we're looking at lots of guys who are, you know, looking at suspensions going into the next round. Potentially, if they get another yellow card.
Yeah, that's interesting to look at. If Neymar gets a yellow card, that means he's out against most likely Belgium, which could give the Belgians a lot of confidence, especially at the high offensive level they're playing right now.
For sure.
Let's kick it over to Group F. Group F, the surprise of the tournament, obviously,
absolutely,
with Germany going out, continuing the World Cup curse. And Sweden, beneficiary of that, they win the group with 6 points on goal differential over Mexico. Germany finishing last, tied with South Korea on points, but last on goal differential. Doug, how big of a surprise was this? Because we kind of saw this when Germany lost to Mexico, but it looked like they didn't really have their best stuff to this World Cup.
It's what a lot of people talked about. There, you get that World Cup hangover, you know, it's happened. Four out of the last five champions have now not made it out of the group stage. The last three champions have not made it out of the group stage. You know, I think it's a complacency thing. I think that the players come in, you know, thinking they're the champions. And Germany has an undeniably talented squad. Like, nobody's going to say that that Germany has a, like a bad team. Like, it's worse than when they won the World Cup. I think people thought it was just as good, if not better. And they just weren't there. You know, even in the last seconds against Sweden, like up until the last seconds against Sweden, they were just checked out from that game. And then, you know, they had that miraculous ending. People were like, oh, Germany's back. But then they just completely blew it against Korea.
Yeah, so obviously we saw Germany officially eliminated against South Korea with that 2-0 defeat. South Korea and Mexico, quite the allies now.
Yep.
Mexico obviously advancing to the round of 16. South Korea finishing with 3 points. How interesting was that? We saw the South Korean representative to Mexico being lifted up on everyone's shoulders as like a thank you to their helping Mexico get to the round of 16. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have really been having fun with Germany going down between Mexico and South Korea. Absolutely loving each other, or Mexico really loving Korea. The other thing I thought was funny was I heard that Brazil they wrote an obituary for Germany after they were eliminated, which is so great. That's pettiness.
Yeah, let's not forget Brazil. You did lose 7-1 to Germany last World Cup, so you're not quite out of trouble just yet. I think the bigger thing about this Mexico-South Korea sort of budding relationship is it just speaks to like how global the World Cup is and how like it just brings people together on that world stage. Like South Korea and Mexico are just – they have probably nothing in common other than the fact that they are completely behind their team and just supporting the heck out of them. So I just thought that was super interesting. Yeah. One fact about Mexico, moving on to the knockout rounds, they enter with the second worst goal differential. Obviously, they're going to be going up against Brazil, as we mentioned earlier. Other than Argentina, they have the second worst goal differential. So it'll be interesting to see that matchup. Another point on Germany, though. It's interesting to see how teams that traditionally possess the ball a lot, like I'm talking well above 70%, have not been as successful this tournament. We see Spain do that all the time. We alluded to that with their just overwhelming midfield. France does it as well. But so I think we're seeing a lot of good counterattacks, really good developing counterattacks. That's why Sweden won their group.
And speaking to that, Mexico, you know, in that Mexico-Germany game, that was their whole game. They were just bend, don't break, letting Germany sort of work them a little bit. And then as soon as they got that counterattack, they took advantage. They got that one goal. It was all they needed. And just to put a bow on Group F, the biggest thought that I had was that Mexico really blew their opportunity, because once they beat Germany, though, they had that path and they really had the opportunity to win the group, not have to face Brazil in the next round, and then they just fell apart against Sweden. And it's, you know, good on Sweden. Like, they're flying very under the radar. You know, I don't think people expected much out of them since, you know, Ibrahimovic hasn't been playing for them. But Zlatan has not been playing for them, you know, people didn't expect much. But good on them for taking down Mexico. But I think that Mexico had all the momentum in the world, and they just sort of, you know, it was just sort of a letdown for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will move on to Group G with that. Group G probably we had to wait a while for our marquee matchup in Belgium and England. That ended up being the last match of the group, and it was so underwhelming. We're going to hear more from Liam about that later. Belgium wins the group with 9 points. England finishes second with 6. Belgium leads the World Cup in goals scored, simply put. They have 9 goals in the first 3 matches. That is a lot. Yeah. Arguably, if you look at the five key Belgium attackers, you have Yannick Ferreira Carrasco, Kevin De Bruyne, Dries Mertens, Romelu Lukaku, and Eden Hazard. Thank you, Alex, for giving me that. That might be the best group of 5 of any squad. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that attack is it's intimidating, to say the least. And, you know, Lukaku is in the golden boot race right now. He's got 4 goals. You know, and I think Belgium, they've just been playing a really solid overall game. And it's just funny because nobody seemed to want to win this group, obviously, because of that draw, which is really silly. But they, you know, just the way it worked out. But you know what? I think the way that they're playing, they don't really fear anybody right now. And especially they're getting
absolutely not.
Right, they're getting that tough side of the bracket, but you know, I think that they can run with anyone else in that bracket as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the other scary thing. Aside from those 5 forwards, did we mention that they have Thibaut Courtois in goal and Vincent Kompany on defense, Jan Vertonghen, and then their bench is just really good. Like Anan Januzaj is a solid bench player for them. So it'll be really interesting to see. When we're talking about the debate about which side of the draw you want to be on, I get that. I get that England is on paper, a better side of the draw. But don't discount the fact that Belgium has never lost in this group stage. They haven't experienced that feeling of what it's like to lose. England has, even though you're playing your reserves against Belgium because you know you're through, and Gareth Southgate, it's really a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situation. let's talk about England. Obviously, Harry Kane leading the Golden Boot race thus far with 5 goals. He is sort of the focal point of that offense. He has a lot of young talent around him. How do you see that? How do you see their chances moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, England has just been fun to watch. When you come into a World Cup, I don't know. England just always seems to be a disappointment, and they always come in with a pretty good squad. You know, you always seem to think that they're going to make some noise, and then they disappoint. And it just felt different this year. They felt like a different squad. They have great guys up front with Jamie Vardy's coming off the bench, and he's a firecracker.
How is
himself.
That possible? How no, is Jamie insane. Vardy coming off the bench? Yeah. It's literally just unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know, Sterling up top, Raheem Sterling up top has been great. He's been doing his part. That team has they've looked really good. And again, like we'll talk about this a little bit more when we get to the knockout stage. But you know, England's going to have a tough game against Colombia to start off. You know, don't discount that side of the bracket as well. You know, you have Spain and Croatia potentially playing each other on the other side. That's, you know, again, there's really no easy path through this whole thing.
While Belgium is probably on the harder side of the bracket when it comes to future matchups, England has a harder matchup right now. Colombia, England, we'll talk more about this later, has the potential to be the best match of the round of 16. If England can't get past that, it's like, well, okay, you could have had Japan in the round of 16, maybe Brazil in the quarters, but Belgium will be able to play knowing they're not going against a very high-powered opponent in terms of their offense. England is. Obviously, James Rodriguez might be hurt, so we'll have to see about that, but good on Belgium. I'd say that's the right strategy because you don't want to lose and then have to go up against Colombia.
Yeah, and a lot of people talk about the momentum argument and saying that maybe England's killing their momentum. I don't know if I completely believe that, but at the same time, yeah, you're right. Like, Belgium's going to get Japan. That I'm not going to say it's going to be an easy game for them, but that's a very manageable.
It's a
very manageable game for Belgium. You know, they should be able to go, and then they'll have to beat Brazil. You know, at the same time, that's not impossible. It's
two
very not impossible.
Like-minded teams in terms of their attack. Obviously, Brazil probably has slightly better defense. Maybe they're the same. Who knows? It's really going to come down to who can convert those chances. With that, we're going to move on to Group H. That, as we alluded to, that was won by Colombia with 6 points. Obviously, this was sort of the group of death on paper before the tournament started. Japan and Senegal tied with 4 points. Japan obviously advancing on fair play, which is kind of laughable.
Gosh.
Poor Senegal. They were just so entertaining. I was ready to see them dance into the round of 16, and they just really got so unlucky here.
Yeah, man, it is such a shame to see Senegal go. They were so much fun to watch. You know, they have a lot of entertaining players. Sadio Mane and Salih Sané, these guys are all just dynamite players, and it's really just such a shame. You know, credit to Japan. I don't think a lot of people gave Japan a chance, especially seeing the other teams in this group with Poland. Obviously, Poland underperformed a little bit. Well, I mean, very much because they're out, and that was in the fourth. They were in the fourth spot. But Japan, you know, they showed up. They've definitely showed up to play, and that's been good.
We're going to go over to Alex for a quick thought.
Yeah, I think a storyline that's probably flown under the radar a bit because there's obviously a lot going on with high-profile teams like Germany is Poland and the complete disappearing act of Robert Lewandowski. I mean, the guy is one of the top strikers in the world. He's Poland's best player. He's a guy who scored tons of goals in the qualifying stages for Poland, and he just completely vanished at the World Cup. Obviously, that's partly due to good defense by the teams they played and focusing on shutting him down. But really, if Poland was ever going to go anywhere, it was going to be dependent on Lewandowski, and I really think he underperformed in this
World
Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge disappointment when it comes to Poland. Yeah, obviously we referred to the fact that Colombia is playing England, Japan is playing Belgium in the round of 16. this is sort of the sneaky group for me. This is sort of the underdogs where they sort of flown under the radar a lot. Obviously, a Colombia victory got them into the round of 16. So it'll be interesting to see how they sort of approach this match. Obviously, don't count them out without James Rodriguez. People associate him with being their only good player. He is not.
Ramadel
Falcao is on fire right now. Davinson Sanchez is a really good center back, and he is going up against his Tottenham teammate in Harry Kane. So don't discount the Colombians without James Rodriguez. I don't know. What do you think about that matchup?
No, absolutely. And you got guys like Juan Cuadrado is playing great in the midfield. Yerry Mina, I think he has two goals as well. He has been unbelievable with that head in the middle, taking advantage of those corners. I agree with you. It's not a completely insurmountable task, Colombia going up against England. They started off, it's funny because they started off tough when they had James Rodriguez with them. And yet when he went down, they were fine. They're guys who were a little bit less heralded stepped up, and that was, you know, that was all they needed.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about Senegal, Japan a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about this fair play statute. So for those who are unaware, basically what happens is you get 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw, no points for a loss. Japan and Senegal finished with one of each, so 4 points essentially. What comes next if you're tied is goal differential. So goals for minus goals against. So the number of goals you score versus the number you allow. Both had a net total of zero. So what comes next is fair play statute.
Goals for comes out. They were goals for, I think.
Excuse
right?
me. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you, Doug. Goals for comes next. Both had four of those. And then obviously next is fair play, which means how many yellow cards did you get? How many red cards did you get?
Yeah, just number of bookings. Yeah.
Yeah. Senegal loses on that. Before Doug answers that, quick shout out to the Senegal fans for cleaning up after themselves. Really, like, underrated storyline of this World Cup. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but it's great. We're going to kick it over to Drake for a quick thought on that.
I just think it's very peculiar for Fox Sports, specifically the coverage responsible for all of us here in the United States, to centralize that story with Japan. It's actually South Korea, or was it?
Japan. You're correct. You're right.
Japan.
So it was Japan. The same thing. But all of a sudden, Fox is dropping the ball on this. Senegal did it first. I also want to highlight that Bleacher Report is credited for highlighting both teams. And on top of that, not only is the fans the most rowdy in that group, in my opinion, their coach, one of the only African coaches to actually coach an African team, who is also a former player and did so very well in Europe. For some reason, I think the ladies are fancying him.
He's got some great hair.
The Nati dreadlocks are always an interesting play depending on where you're at. But I just want to highlight how Senegal was the most successful African team in this World Cup. Obviously, people will argue that Nigeria had their say in things. But in terms of the group, you can't get a lesser unfortunate position than Senegal losing on this.
And they handled it with such grace. That's absolutely. The other thing. They were so graceful about it. And, I mean, Japan goes through. It's disappointing for Senegal. They are a very entertaining team.
Yeah. And Senegal, let's highlight the Senegalese here, player to player. You've got Sadio Mane with Liverpool, made it to the Champions League final, was actually just under Mohamed Salah in the Champions League total of goals. It was Ronaldo, then Salah, then Mane, then Roberto Firmino, who plays for Brazil. They were actually tied. And then on top of that, you take a look at the other players. Salif Sané is a very underrated center half who plays in Germany. He used to play for Hanover. So I just want to say Senegal, great job, but we'll have to see what they're like in the African Cup of Nations. and the next World Cup in Qatar in 4 years.
Before we move on to the round of 16 preview, thoughts on this fair play statute? Is this a good way to decide groups?
Simply put, it's not the best way. But, I mean, if it's between that and drawing lots, yeah, I'll take that. Like, there's nobody wants to just be picked out of a hat. That's a little bit silly. I wish they could come up with something better. I mean, there's just – it's really, really tough to say because so many of these stats are so subjective. I mean, especially – I mean, definitely these fair play points are very subjective because it's up to the referees, you know, but you could look at something like – I don't know, possession, which again is like a slippery slope a little bit. Maybe you don't want to use possession, you know, shots on goal, but it's tough. Like it's a really, really tough argument because if it's between this and drawing, you know, names out of a hat, clearly you'd rather have this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really tough to decide that. We're going to leave those to the gentlemen at FIFA and we're going to move on to the knockout round matchup. So, on Monday, we are going to have Brazil, Mexico, and Belgium, Japan. Look at what excites you about either one of those matchups, Doug.
So, going into the tournament, and you know, even throughout this tournament, people have been riding Brazil and saying that Brazil is, you know, unstoppable and have they're completely untouchable. Man, don't count out Mexico. They again, I don't expect them to win this game necessarily. But I don't expect Mexico to win, but I expect them to definitely have a great showing.
Just a quick note, Mexico has advanced to every round of 16 since 1994. They've never won. So history is not on Mexico's side right now. They're definitely facing not a really tough side. Moving on to Belgium, Japan. We talked a little bit about this earlier. Belgium looks great right now.
Yeah,
they Belgium look outstanding. Just good luck, Japan. I mean, you're going to need every little thing you can get against this team. I don't know. Let's focus on Japan for a second. What does Japan have to do to win this matchup?
I mean, possibly similar to the way that Mexico beat Germany. I don't know if they even have this capability, but, you know, contain, look for that counterattack. And because if they play too aggressively, Belgium's just going to bury them. And that, you know, they risk getting absolutely destroyed on that.
It's really going to come down – for Japan, it's going to come down to two players, Kazuki Honda, Shinji Kagawa. They need an outstanding performance to win this
definitely
matchup.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
We're going to move on next. We have Group F winner Sweden against Group E runner-up Switzerland.
Battle of the SWs.
Yeah, that is on Tuesday. That is the first match on Tuesday. Kind of like – France, Argentina, or Uruguay, Portugal. This is a really even matchup. We should get excited about this, right?
So it's a really even matchup. That doesn't mean we need to get excited about it. It's a little. This is. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. This is a pretty tame matchup on paper. Again, very even. Sweden been flying very much under the radar with the way they've been playing. Switzerland looks great, but again, they don't play a very exciting brand of football and. It should be pretty even. So
Sweden should be very excited about this game. I'll tell you why. Because their counterattack, perhaps the best in the tournament. We see that they do not possess the ball. They are perfectly fine losing the possession battle 70-30. But with that said, they have one of the best counterpunches in the league. Just ask Real Madrid midfielder Toni Kroos about that. Because literally one Toni Kroos turnover is what sent Sweden to the net to score. Is Granit Xhaka on the same level as Toni Kroos? Of course he isn't. So Sweden should be very excited about the fact that Granit Xhaka is going to make mistakes and they are going to capitalize on this. I think if any match has a chance to go extra time to PKs, look to this one. This is a pretty good bet along with Uruguay, Portugal. Moving on, our last matchup of the round of 16 is Colombia, England.
Yeah, I'm.
If James plays, we're in for a treat.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really awesome if James could get in this game. You know, even if he doesn't, Colombia has we mentioned it earlier. Colombia's been just fine without him. And again, obviously he helps a lot, but they looked great without him. They you know, all of their other players really stepped up. I think that they're going to give England a run for their money. Again, England's one of the youngest teams in the tournament, which in their case, might actually benefit them because their older guys were never able to get it done. But having that young core and that inexperienced core maybe would actually be good for them.
This matchup is the battle of the set pieces. Both teams have great set pieces. England traditionally was not a very good set piece team. Now they're great, apparently. And it really, Harry Kane is the focal point of this offense. We're going to go over to Alex.
Yeah, just a quick note, and a thought of why they've gotten so much better at set pieces. Harry Kane was taking corners in Euro 2016, which was a really strange decision, and they've done a lot better with him in the box rather than out of it. That's all I got.
Thank you, Alex. That is a good point to make. I'll point to this matchup one more time. Harry Kane and Davinson Sanchez. James has only played in 2 full matches. He came off the bench in their first match. He exited their last match early. The only full match he's played was the second one. Sorry, I did my math wrong there, everyone. Mm-hmm. So Colombia's going to do just fine. How do you see this matchup playing out, I guess? What do you see happening here?
Again, it's close for sure. Like both of these matches in the bottom quarter of the bracket, you know, I think they're going to be tight ones. For me personally, I would love to see England finally flip the narrative and, you know, get further than they have in, you know, decades, I think. And I think that would be really great.
England has a lot of pressure on them to win right now. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have a great interview with Liam Dotson from the Central News Agency in London. Stick around. This is SoccerCast.
SoccerCast, I'm Alex Campbell, and I'm pleased to welcome on our first guest, Liam Dotson from London, England, a good friend of mine, and who's just gotten back from the World Cup over in Russia. Liam, how are you?
I'm good, Alex. How are you?
Doing well. So I know you just got back this morning. Just wanted to get your perspective as someone who was at the World Cup in person. Just how's the atmosphere? What's it like to go to the World Cup in person, to be there in person, to be following a team? None of us have done that before, so if you can give us some perspective on what that experience is like.
Sure. It's incredible. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It's such like a carnival party atmosphere, you know, all these people from around the world coming together, celebrating football, celebrating, you know, a different culture, a way of life and stuff, and, you know, alternative to what people said before the World Cup, you know, the Russians have been really welcoming.
You're there following England. What have your thoughts been on the team's performance so far, especially having the chance to have watched them in person? What's your assessment of the Three Lions through their first 3 games?
From the first 2 games, I've been pleasantly surprised. They all seem to be really, really proud to be wearing the shirt. Lingard and Ali in particular have been brilliant between the lines, creating stuff, and obviously we've got one of the best strikers in the world knocking in the goals.
So given that, you know, England have advanced now, and they did rotate the squad a lot in that third game, how do you feel about that decision by Gareth Southgate? Are you okay with it, given that, you know, hey, we played a weaker squad, and it's resulted in us being on the easier side of the draw, or would you have liked to see players like Harry Kane, Jesse Lingard, be left in the team because of how well they've been playing to, you know, keep that momentum?
Well, that's the thing. The question is momentum and whether you kill the momentum by making wholesale changes. But on the other side of the coin, you can understand, you know, resting players and ensuring that we don't burn out.
I know you mentioned to me before we came on the pod today that you have tickets to the final. So give me both your hopeful expectation and your realistic expectation for how far you think England can go in this tournament.
Well, I mean, I like to think my hopeful, realistic expectations are the same thing, that we can go on to win it. Particularly, like you say, being on this side of the draw, you know, Colombia present a difficult test, can't hide from that. But, you know, if they're missing James Rodriguez, like it's looking likely, then there's absolutely no reason why we can't beat them and then Sweden or Switzerland in a World Cup quarterfinal. If you'd offered me that before the tournament, I would have bitten your hand off. I think we can go on and win it. I think semi-finals is a realistic expectation. And you're only 90 minutes away from the final then, so we'll see.
Liam, yeah. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know you've got a busy schedule like the rest of us do. Thanks so much for being willing to be our first guest on SoccerCast, and we really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers, man.
Thanks again to Liam Dodson for that great interview. Really appreciate him taking the time and filling us in about his experience going to the World Cup over in Russia. And Doug, that's just kind of reflecting on Liam's thoughts. That's just got to be a really unbelievable experience to be able to attend something like the World Cup in person.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been on my bucket list forever, to actually go to a World Cup. Obviously, to cover a World Cup would be, you know, so outstanding. And, you know, and Russia is... it's been in the news a lot lately. It seems like they've put on a really good show so far. But now that the United States just won their bid, North America, well, so yeah, I guess North America just won the bid, but really the United States won the bid. We're going to get it in 8 years, and we're going to have that weird thing in Qatar. But after that, we're going to get it here. And that is just, it's going to be so exciting. And, you know, I'll be there either way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know I probably speak for all of us when I can't wait to be able to attend and to hopefully be able to cover. Looking again at some other things Liam was touching on, Drake, he noted that he would have liked to see players like Harry Kane playing every match because, you know, it's only 7 matches. They can power through that. To see that consistency game to game is – do you agree with him that that momentum might be more valuable than rotating the squad in the instance like the Belgium game?
You know what? I really appreciate Liam – bringing that up in the discussion, because if you take a look at what it's done to other clubs, other teams, other national teams, you take a look at France doing the exact same thing against Peru. They were switching constantly with their especially their defenders, their fullbacks. You take a look at Lucas Hernandez going in for Sabide. Sabide wasn't necessarily doing the job. However, he had cohesive and an understanding with the rest of the back line. Going to England, it's the same thing. It's going to be hard for that midfield. It's going to be hard for Jordan Henderson, meaning the Liverpool holding midfielder, to be able to facilitate and how to bring that possession into the attacking third. So I appreciate Liam doing that, because Ali Wagner said the same thing for Fox at how it's affecting France and their team chemistry. It's going to do the same thing for England.
And one final thought on the interview, Nick, we know Liam is being pretty optimistic about his assessment of how far England can go. He's got his tickets to the World Cup final. He says there's no reason they can't make the semis, and at that point it's just one game away. You think he's on the right track there, or is he overdoing it a bit?
I mean, he's definitely on the right track. Let me start by saying this. England can absolutely make the World Cup final. We should not doubt that. They have a very difficult matchup in Colombia to start the round of 16. We talked a little bit earlier on the pod about how maybe Japan was a more favorable matchup to them. They have the weight of the world in the country on their shoulders right now, and they have high expectations. And I think rightfully so. This country expects this team to do well. If they can get past Colombia, it's hard to see them not making the semifinals. I'm high on England. I think as long as Harry Kane continues to shine, as long as their young talent can still grab a couple of goals, they can make a run. So we'll just have to wait and see, though, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, it's one of those things that's become very cliche to talk about how England are going to disappoint and how England are going to always be a letdown. But hey, you absolutely never know. All right, moving on in our podcast today, we're going to do a couple quick hitters here, give our individual thoughts on a few different things that have been going on at the World Cup.
Let's get it.
So I'm going to be starting off and talking about the Golden Boot contenders. Coming out of this group stage, Harry Kane's out in front, Cristiano Ronaldo, Romelu Lukaku, hot on his heels, and we're looking forward to, you know, who's going to be there, who's going to be on top of the table at the end. Obviously, it pays to advance far in the tournament. And looking at the different options here, I've really, I think, got to favor Diego Costa, because I see Spain going real far in this tournament and going to give Diego Costa a good opportunity to score a lot of goals and secure that top scoring award, that Golden Boot, at this World Cup. Although, if England go far, don't sleep on Harry Kane. That man is always in the right place at the right time.
Absolutely. Next up, we're going to have some golden ball candidates. Obviously, the golden ball goes to the most valuable player of the tournament. We've seen players like Lionel Messi, Diego Maradona. Those are two Argentinians win the award previously. Some early candidates. You're going to have to check me on this. But look for a team like Mexico. If they make a run, Guillermo Ochoa absolutely has a claim to the golden ball. Obviously, that there is a golden glove award reserved for keepers. We're going to have to check and see if goalkeepers can win the golden ball. If it doesn't go to him, sometimes there's a little layover with the golden boot winner. Someone like Harry Kane. If France makes a run, perhaps Kylian Mbappe will win it. But it'll be interesting. There's no clear favorite right now, and I think that's what a lot of people are liking about the Golden Ball.
So thanks, Nick. Doug and I are going to give you the champ and chump players so far in the group stage. Essentially, we're going to be highlighting those who have overwhelmed and underwhelmed as far as their performances are concerned. Doug, would you like to go first?
My champ right now, you know, outside the obvious, maybe not so incredibly not obvious, I think I got that right. Romelu Lukaku has been outstanding. You know, obviously Harry Kane is leading in the Golden Boot right now, but Lukaku has looked so great. He's really been leading that Belgian offense, you know, pretty expertly. So he's my champ right now.
And your chump?
My chump, I got to take David De Gea because he has just, like, Spain has looked, you know, great despite has looked great, everything outside of the goalkeeping, and De Gea really needs to get his stuff together. I actually just saw a news report saying that they are going to go with him no matter what. But if he can't get it together, you know, Spain looks like a champion team right now, but that could be a problem for them going forward.
You know what, Doug? It's all about Robert Lewandowski is my chump. I'll tell you what. Lewandowski is in a position where he's been performing at the club level for some time now. But yet when it comes to the big games, if you take a look at that UEFA Champions League semifinal against Real Madrid, completely covered, completely blanketed by Sergio Ramos and Rafael Varane of Real Madrid. The same thing comes at the international stage. You have not scored in all three games in the group stage. You're leaving Poland in a position where they're having to gamble and having to push extra men forward. So he's my chump. Do better, Robert Lewandowski. And for my champ, Harry Kane has won that position for me. Number one, let's just take a look at Harry Kane's record for Tottenham Hotspur in the English Premier League has been one of the best number nines, not only in England, but in the world. And he's finally translated that. He's gone from taking corner kicks, as you said, Alex, in the previous segment on this show. Now he's taken that into being a traditional number nine and is one of the top scorers. Actually, he is the top scorer so far with 5 in the World Cup. He is my champ. And now we're going to set you up for Saturday's games. First off, France and Argentina are going to kick it off. It's going to be an excellent match, an excellent attacking match for you. Following that, we've got Uruguay and Portugal. Uruguay has not allowed a goal all World Cup. We're going to see if Cristiano Ronaldo can say something about that. So I think that's enough coverage for today, but now we're going to tell you who we are and what this podcast is for. Doug?
Cool. My name is Doug Greenberg. I am originally from Boston, Massachusetts, and I'm a supporter of Chelsea.
My name is Nicholas Henyon. I am from beautiful Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and sadly, I am a supporter of Arsenal FC.
I'm Alex Campbell. I'm from right here in lovely Chicago, Illinois. I'm a Chelsea supporter and big follower of the U.S. men's national team.
What's going on, y'all? It's Drake Hills, a proud supporter of Bayern Munich, a University of Oregon alum from sunny San Diego, and we are SoccerCast. We want to thank you for listening to this inaugural episode of SoccerCast. We'd also like to send a big shout-out to our producer, Chris Cadeau, for having our back. Check out our coverage for the World Cup knockout stage as it unfolds and leads into the 2018-2019 club season. We hope you had fun, because so did we. From the Chicago Loop, peace.